And the also-rans are still running. Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principles and Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michaels.
Yeah, good to be back with you. Even though we're not together in the studio, we're coming to you by the magic of Skype. So if you hear some strange noises and thumping and things, we're doing our best, folks. Sometimes you have to make concessions to two men who live, 120 miles apart?
Something of that nature, yes.
Yeah. And you're up here because of your business very often, and I'm in southeastern Ohio almost never.
Almost never.
Yeah, right. Twice a year maybe as I drive past and wave at you as I go past on my way someplace else usually. So.
Mm-hmm, indeed. So that's about the size of it. But, you know, we still have fun because through the magic of internet and cell towers and other things, and thankfully a new operating system for me. I just had a complete crash, destroying of my hard drive here this week. So it's been kind of fun this week.
It sounds like a blast.
keep going, but thankfully I have my own in-house tech guru, Charles, and no, he's not you. Chuck's usually my tech guru on everything else, but this time around I went to my never fail number one tech guy, my oldest son, who happens to know more about computers than I ever will.
Well, he knows more than I do. Occasionally I know something that he doesn't know, but usually he knows a lot more than that I don't know. So
yeah, and he's constantly voraciously reading and keeping himself updated on the latest technology, the latest ways of coding, and to the point where when my hard drive crashed, Chuck, usually for most people that's a screaming into the darkness kind of moment. For me it was, okay son, what can we do here? And he said, well, give me that, let me go take a look at it. And he brings it back down and he goes, well, I can't recover your files, but maybe you can get somebody who's got a clean room to do that. But I have put a new hard drive in, and you've got a completely new operating system, so at least you can keep going and doing what you're doing.
Yeah, so I understand you're on Linux.
I am a Linux guy now, and I actually kind of like it.
Yeah, I've been hesitant just because, for a number of reasons, which really the audience probably doesn't care about. You went to Ubuntu?
Exactly. That's right. It's an Ubuntu Linux operating system.
Yep. Yes. Yeah. That's apparently one of the. That is probably, from what I understand, the most stable one. And
that's my understanding as well, and I'm pretty happy with it. But at the very least, Chuck, and I think our audience will appreciate this. The one thing I do not have to worry about now is that every time I start up my box, I don't get this little pop up window that says, reminder, your free upgrade to Windows 10 is waiting for you. I no longer have to deal with Microsoft.
Well, I have. I'm a kind of a fan of Windows 10 because it looks more like Windows 7. So I have converted most of my hardware to Windows 10. It's got issues, but it's better than Vista.
Okay.
I bought a computer when Vista was out, and they said, you know, it's downgradable to Windows XP, and I go, good. Now, downgradable to Windows XP, you know what that meant, Barry?
No.
That means it came with Windows XP loaded up, and they handed you a Vista disk. So,
okay.
Yeah. So guess what? I have a Vista disk sitting down there. And as far as I meant to draw Skull and Crossbones on it and, put a note on it. Do not use under any circumstances. we had a Vista computer in the house and oh my gosh, it was a nightmare. So I've heard good things about Ubuntu. One of the reasons I haven't switched over is, you know, I'm reluctant for a number of reasons, you know, software and driver issues and that kind of thing. But mostly because of the people who are telling me, you know, I'll be on a Windows forum and I'll say, I'm having trouble with this. How do I fix it? And somebody will go, here's how you fix it. download Ubuntu and install it on you. And I'm like, okay, be gone, troll. That's not what I'm asking, and I'm not going to be downloading any new operating systems to fix this minor problem. So I got trolled. It turned me off.
That's okay. I had a major problem, so I went with it.
Exactly.
I've been very happy. So,
yeah.
But you know what? Computers and operating systems and hard drives are one thing because, yes, you can change them out without a problem. But Democratic presidential candidates are another thing. And, yes, I know that was a very, very awkward switch. But we need to get started today because we're going to be talking about on the program the also-rans. In other words, the folks other than the top five, make that three now, candidates for the Democratic nomination for President of the United States. And as our folks who regularly listen to us know, we began this, we talked about the Republican candidates, all 34 of them at the time, and that's been winnowed down just slightly. I think there's now 32. We're going to be talking about the Democratic candidates, and we originally talked about the top five. That would be Hillary Clinton, Bernie Sanders, Martin O'Malley, Jim Webb, and Lincoln Chafee. Well, since the time we talked, and we did do an update in our last program, that Jim Webb had decided to drop out of the Democratic primary race with the potential, and he's reserving the right, to run as an independent. We talked about that a little bit on our previous program. But in the interim period, from the time we taped that program to this one, another of the top-tier candidates has dropped out of the race, Charles, and that would be Lincoln Chafee of Rhode Island, who honestly just could not see a path to getting the Democratic nomination, mainly because the path was never there in the first place when he entered the race.
Well, exactly. Nobody knows who he is. They may have a recollection of a guy named Chafee who was a moon astronaut. That's not him, and it's not his dad, and it's not his grandpa. So
that's right.
Lincoln is the son of John Chafee, who was a senator, a Republican senator from Rhode Island. And Lincoln was the governor in Rhode Island as a Democrat. And as I recall, John Chafee also switched parties.
Yes, he did. He was a Republican, and he switched to the Democratic Party.
We've had issues with people who switch parties. If you recall, Arlen Specter, a senator from Pennsylvania, absolutely, who's the late Arlen Specter, for years and years and years and years was a Republican senator from Pennsylvania, having switched parties. He originally served in lower offices as a Democrat and switched to run as a Republican in what you could only call a purple state, I guess, these days, Pennsylvania.
Oh, Pennsylvania, yeah. And Pennsylvania. Rhode Island, definitely a blue state.
Definitely a blue state. There's no doubt about that. The only way to get elected as a Republican in Rhode Island is to be a liberal Republican. It's sort of like New York in that respect. New York has had some they had Alphonse D'Amato, who was anything but a raving conservative. And, of course, they treated him like he was some kind of a right-wing extremist weirdo. And at best, he was middle of the road. In any case, there concessions have to be made in some cases. However, there's nothing that stops these guys. Unfortunately, with that particular mindset, you think you can do anything.
Well, you know, Chuck, Chafee is not the only person in the Democratic Party who's having that same type of difficulty. Because, as we mentioned before, during the debates, there were only five Democratic candidates who were on that stage discussing and debating and talking about how wonderful life is under their socialist Marxist regimes that they would like to implement. And I'm not kidding about that, because if anybody paid attention to those debates, they were basically trying to out-socialize each other, with the exception of Jim Webb, which is, I think, one of the main reasons why he jumped out of the race. However, Chuck, as you know, and I know, there's more than five individuals who have declared a candidacy for the presidency in the Democratic Party. And many of these folks are, and we're going to talk about them today, are in it because of certain particular key issues or passions that they have. and they want to see a difference made. And some of them don't think that the major Democratic candidates are, well, left enough. I hate to say it, but some of them think that these guys are moderates. And I would hate to see a presidency to the left of Bernie Sanders. And I don't think we'll have to worry too much about that because, again, like with the large majority, over half of the announced Republican candidates, these Democratic candidates probably aren't going to get much traction unless they're actually doing like some town hall meeting in their own backyard, because they're obviously not out nationally campaigning. They're not on the stump. You know, they don't have a super PAC behind them. And I'm not saying that in the sense that, you know, you need to have all that in order to run for office. But in this environment, if you don't have those things, it's the uphill climb is more of an inverted slope.
It's interesting, Barry, that as I look at this list, I'm seeing things. Now, not everybody is coming at this from the left, at least it's from Bernie Sanders, far left end of the left end scale. And I had to laugh at Lindsey Graham, who doesn't get many laughs, except when people examine his record and examine the things that he says about his performance. But he made a comment that I thought was absolutely hilarious, and that comment was that Bernie Sanders went to the Soviet Union and apparently he never came back.
Yeah, exactly. So, or the line that Ted Cruz used, that the Democratic debate was a debate between the Bolsheviks and the Mensheviks.
Yes. And unfortunately, that particular historical reference will be lost on a lot of people.
Sadly enough.
Yeah. Yes. And if you want to know, we're not going to go into it today because we don't have enough time. I'm looking at some people on this list, and they're actually talking about attempting to do cross-party unification and that kind of thing. Well, these guys, if they're serious about that, know you can't do it from the far left. It's just not going to happen. Other people I see on here are like, they're every bit as far left as Bernie Sanders, if not further, like you said. So.
Exactly. Well, let's get started on these declared 2016 Democratic presidential candidates. And folks, you can find this list at 2016.democratic-candidates.org, which we'll have linked up to our website, just like we did with the Republican side of this. I'm not really sure who's moderating this site or posting this site, because it really, they're doing a fantastic service, Chuck. I have to say that. I'm a hat tip to this organization or whoever's behind this website, because it's allowing people to actually see who really is out there asking for their vote. And the first declared candidate we have is a guy who is a job creator. His name's Hal Aster. Now, Hal Aster says that basically he wants to stop the flow of American jobs to China. And I think that's fantastic. It sounds very, very, very solid, especially more solid than what we've heard from the major Democratic candidates. And he really says that he's not a politician. And actually, I think that kind of aligns him a little bit higher on the scale here, because that seems to be the current trend among a lot of voters, is they're tired of career politicians. That's the reason why on the Republican side, Donald Trump seems to be so popular. And not to mention that, you know, he's a very incendiary type figure himself. So Aster basically really has said that he's really running to compete directly against Hillary Clinton. So he was a former independent who filed as a Democrat. So obviously he's very upset about the Clinton regime and believes that we really need to have better job creation in this country. And he has actually a detailed plan to incentivize small businesses to hire people collecting unemployment and welfare benefits and imposing tax penalties on firms that ship jobs overseas. And he is for a wide opening of oil drilling in and around the United States, which means Anwar and then the Gulf and in other places where the current administration, and one would think likely a potential Hillary or Bernie administration, would still hold a ban or major restrictions on such drilling. So it's interesting because, you know, Aster is probably not going to get much traction. But given what he said here, Chuck, or his bio, I would say that he probably actually could run in either party and give the front runners a little bit of a headache.
Well, it's interesting. There's an editorial comment in here. Apparently, this guy's big thing is job creation.
Yeah.
And there is an editorial comment. It says, Astor is extremely passionate on the issue of job creation. Great. Indeed, it constitutes the most well-defined portion of his political platform. He argues, and here's the editorial comment, with questionable historical backing, that the current U.S. unemployment rate is higher than any other point in history. Okay, this is where we get into that whole white lies, black lies, and statistics argument. Mm-hmm. Because the fact is that, yes, the unemployment rate, the official government rate is what, something like 6 or 7% or something?
Oh, I believe it's actually lower than that.
Yeah, so maybe it's in the fives. I don't pay that close attention because I know it's nonsense. The real number is in the teens because, look, Barry, we've got about 318 million people in this country. I think that's the current right. estimate. 94 million of them are not working. Okay, that's very close to one-third of the people aren't working. Okay, why aren't they working? Well, some people are retired. That's obvious. But even a lot of retirement people work. But these people have a huge number of them have lost hope. They've lost their jobs. They went through 99 weeks of unemployment, and there's no money left. And they've given up. They're living with relatives. They're living with friends. They're living on the street. You know, they're waiting for the foreclosure people to come and padlock the place. So there's all kinds of issues involved in that thing, and I think that's an unfair. That particular comment is unfair because he's correct. The number's much higher. It may not be as high as it was at other times, but remember that whole unemployment phenomena is only as old as like the 20th century. People didn't count people out of work. You were just expected to work. When you couldn't work, you either lived on what you had saved, or you went into lived with relatives and things. So again, I like this guy's idea to create jobs. The problem is that the left thinks that you can both create jobs, and they think government creates jobs, which is nonsense. And they also think that at the same time you can take the incentive away from creating jobs by having high taxes. Sorry, that doesn't work. When you have high corporate taxes, the companies tend to and other things that cause expenses, companies tend to hire fewer people. That is simply an undeniable fact. So
exactly. Okay, well, moving on, our next candidate for the Democratic nomination, declared candidate, is Robbie Wells, Robert Carr Wells Jr., who is my age, Chuck. He's 47 years old. He's a former college football coach, born and raised in Clayton, Alabama, and was a four-year starter at Furman University. So, hey, you know what? As a Marshall fan, I'd have to boo because then they won a national championship against Marshall. He's lost my vote. Just kidding about that. But basically, he holds master's degrees in adult education and bachelor's degree in health and exercise science. He has been in the Army. He joined the Army in 2006. And he lives in North Carolina, and he's a small business owner. He's also no stranger to presidential politics, Charles, because Robbie Wells was, in the past, in 2012, a declared candidate for president under the Constitution Party. Now, did you just drop your cup of coffee there?
No, the dog kind of went nuts, and I think maybe he heard that. So, yeah, that's a little strange. And the Constitution Party in 2012, you and I have been out of the Constitution Party now for 9 years.
It's been a little while.
Yeah, so what goes on there, it really doesn't shock me anymore. However, a guy that comes out of there and runs as a Democrat is a bit of a shock. Although, you know, one of the things we always said was you're drawing people from a very disparate group. And as you recall, we always said the Constitution Party was actually two parties kind of rammed together.
Yes.
It was the anti-tax guys and the essentially the constitutional guys. And very often the anti-tax guys and the Constitution guys clashed because most of the Constitution guys were Christian constitutionalist guys and most of the anti-tax guys were libertarians.
Libertarian anti-taxers, that's right. And so those two philosophies tend to mix as well as oil and water does.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
So anyhow, so Wells basically really is more of a libertarian. You know, he wants to bring the troops home, which sounds like the Democrat platform, but he wants to give states more power. In other words, he seems to be more in the line of a nullification states' rights kind of guy. But he also wants to, like, stick it to big business for paying their, quote-unquote, fair share in taxes, whatever that is, as he's designed it. So, but he does know how to raise money, Chuck, which is a thing that I'm probably sure that most of the candidates in this list don't know how to do, because he raised $20,000 for his run for the Constitution Party nomination for president. Sadly enough, in 2012, he was not able to secure that nomination. And so he announced after the November 2012 election, his 16 campaign, where he was going to run independently, but now he's running as a Democrat. So he's, I would call him the anti-Jim Webb. He's, instead of starting as a Democrat and then announcing as an independent afterwards, he went the other direction.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So anyhow, so I don't believe Robbie Wells is going to pick up a lot of Democratic base votes. But, you know, kudos to him for deciding to run and try to make a difference in that party. Now, the third person, some folks, although I doubt very many in our listening audience, may have heard of in the past. And if you're paying any attention to the environmentalist movement, Chuck, or, you know, you're familiar with Agenda 21 and the things that our friend Tom DeWeese talks about, you might recognize this name. This candidate is has won the distinction as the BBC's World Historic Figure for anti-GMO activism. His name is Andy Caffrey. And Caffrey is a hardcore environmentalist and an advocate against genetically modified organisms, or GMOs, in our food supply. And he is basically running he's really a Green Party type guy, but he's running on the Democratic platform in order to promote environmentalism. So he's from California, has studied chemistry at the University of California, San Diego, and he has been an environmentalist, and he's politically active and has done all kinds of different things. But his claim to fame is that in 2002, the BBC, the British Broadcasting Corporation, you know, those who are famous for Downton Abbey and Doctor Who, named him as a world historic figure as the, quote, world's first trasher of genetically engineered crops. He is the one who's credited with stoking the anti-GMO wave across Europe and Asia back in the early 2000s, which actually prompted 70 nations to partially or completely ban the use of genetically modified organisms. You know what, Chuck? From my position, I actually agree with him on that particular issue.
That particular point, I think he's got a point. It's GMO is a major problem, and I know we've got some farmers who listen to this program who may disagree strongly. Sorry, guys. I am a biochemist. I have major problems with some of the, especially with the programming by groups like Archer Daniels Midland and the programming genes into seeds that basically kill the seed, so you'll have to constantly buy seed. You can't replant from your store, from your harvest. You have to buy new seed from these companies, DeKalb and all these other giants. It's dangerous, Barry. They're putting all kinds of genes into plants that aren't supposed to be there. God didn't put them there. And, that sounds Luddite. Yeah, fine. It's Luddite. God designed the food to do what it's supposed to do, and we are now reaping the consequences of that.
Oh, and absolutely.
Now, this guy has other really screwy ideas about global warming and that kind of thing. So,
well, actually, in global warming, he actually wants to have the climate crisis, as he describes it, declared as a national security threat. And so, therefore, I suppose if you get your carbon footprint gets too big, you can be sent to Gitmo. Now, his other claim to fame, and I'm surprised, Charles, that he hasn't been spending time in Ohio lately with this one, is that he is a major proponent of marijuana legalization. And actually, and he ran for the 2nd Congressional District in California in 2012, and he was famous and actually got derided for this by Jay Leno on The Tonight Show, when during a campaign stop, he, on stage, pulled out a marijuana cigarette, a joint, and smoked it on the podium.
And unfortunately, he probably made more sense than all the other candidates on the podium
after smoking it. That's right. And he's also pledged that during this campaign, he will give out quote-unquote "caffrey for president" rolling papers. So in other words, roll your own with the smoking president.
Well, I got to ask if it's a safe, if the papers are made without toxic products, and if the ink is safe to burn.
I'm sure as a dedicated hardcore environmentalist, I'm sure that he's cleared all that ahead of time.
I'm going to quickly point out the fact that while this guy hates the idea of cultivating certain places, like he doesn't want the rainforest wiped out to cultivate certain things, I don't think he has a problem with it to grow dope. So
no,
I guess it depends on whose ox is being gored.
Exactly. Okay, our next moving on, our declared Democratic presidential candidate is a small business owner, a Sunday school superintendent, and deacon of his church, Willie Carter. Willie Carter is also a retired member of the United States Air Force. This is his 8th consecutive run for the presidency, so he's got a lot of experience on the campaign trail, Chuck.
It's the Democratic Harold Stassen.
Yeah, exactly. Now, he says that he entered this race and has done this for 8 consecutive times. You figure that's once every 4 years. That's 32 years Willie Carter has been running for president. He was, quote, commanded of the Lord to enter the race to become president of the United States of America, Chuck. So he has a divine calling on his run here, according to what he believes. Now, Chuck, I wonder if he's run. This is his 8th consecutive run, which 8 times 4 is 32. I wonder if he's going to have to run 2 more times, because then in that 40th year, in that generation year that the Old Testament looks at, that maybe that will be the time that the Lord will have prepared him, because this is his walking in the wilderness for the 40 years until he becomes the president of the United States. Now, of course, Mr. Carter is right now 72 years old, and so therefore I'm hoping that he is around to run a couple more times. God bless him. But I'm not sure that he's probably going to make the promised land of the presidency here.
Well, just remember that Moses was 80 when he led the children of Israel out of Egypt.
Yeah. Now, and like many African American individuals, Charles, he is a registered Democrat. But if you look at his background and his record, and the fact that the church that he is a deacon at, which is the a church of the denomination Church of God in Christ, or Kojic. Kojic is probably one of the most conservative African-American denominations in the country. And he was born in Texas, and he's now resides in Los Angeles. And he's their general Sunday school superintendent. And he also owns the company Fantastic Sounds Gospel Recording. So Mr. Carter obviously would probably play well across the boards with both Republicans and Democrats. He is a member of the Democratic Party, but he has run, like I said, for 8 consecutive terms, and he really is wanting to serve people in this respect. Now, we could go over to his. If you want to learn more about any of these, where these candidates are thinking or what their platforms are. In that website that we're going to post up on the link to this, they have links to each of these candidates' campaign websites or campaign profiles or campaign statements, whatever they have available. Again, I really commend whoever put together this site, because they really give you a large number of tools to be able to make informed decisions about candidates. Now, they do it with a little bit of editorial commentary, Chuck. Yeah, you and I have said that.
Yeah.
Some of it more left-leaning than others, especially on the Republican side when we talk about them. But overall, I think they do a pretty good job about how this is going. So, anyhow, our next contender is an attorney, a community leader, an advocate for the elderly and disabled. His name is Michael Steinberg, and he entered the race to bring attention to issues that are not being addressed and to advocate for those forgotten in Washington, especially the elderly, disabled, and veterans. Attorney Steinberg, he lives in the Tampa Bay, Florida area. He's been practicing law for 30 years. And he really believes that basically that the government needs to be more efficient. And as he said, using the power of government is effective and can be made more appealing if waste and abuse are found and removed. I'm not sure we would totally agree with that, Chuck. I do believe that, yes, government does have power. And, yes, it could be effectively targeted in right ways. But only the way that you can do that is by chaining it down with the Constitution.
Right. Right.
So basically, you know, Steinberg, as a Democrat, is talking about a number of things, including strong foreign policy with strengthened ties with our allies, rethinking education policies to redesign and strengthen schools and place the emphasis on achievement and excellence, and a number of things, job growth, things of that nature. Really, it's interesting, Chuck, that other than probably the top tier now, three candidates in the Democratic Party, Hillary, Bernie, and Martin O'Malley, it seems like a large portion of the other folks who are running on the Democratic ticket are extremely conservative or moderate when it comes to their outlook on the power of the presidency and the uses for such.
Which is a rare thing, by the way. You have to think about it in these terms. The reason people are running for the presidency is because we've developed in this country a really weird cultural thing about our president. People very often on the left and on the right want to think about the president as some sort of king who can issue decrees. And in fact, it's sort of reinforced by the current president who acts like a king and issues decrees.
Yes, that's the standpoint.
And unfortunately, one of the reasons that John Boehner just lost his job is because he did nothing to stop the king from issuing decrees.
Exactly.
He just went along with it.
Exactly. All right, well, moving along here, because we have 19 people who have declared for the candidacy for president, three of whom have dropped out, one before actually declaring, that's Joe Biden. We've talked about five of them now, and so we're kind of cracking down through here. Hopefully we'll get this all done in this program. our next candidate is Brad Winslow, who's an information manager, and basically says that the government is a business owned by the American people and a business whose managers are insufficiently accountable to their bosses. I wonder if he heard me talk at a couple of the public presentations I've been giving this month when I basically say, you pay their salary, you hire them to their jobs with your vote, why don't they work for you?
Yeah.
And his goal in this run for president is to move one particular thing. It's called the Public House Amendment to the Constitution. And really what he wants to say, that basically he wants to promote, sell, and explain that his goal in life itself, Chuck, is this amendment. Now, he proposes creating a new chamber of government, the Public House, to be staffed entirely by unpaid or modestly paid volunteers, and whose purpose would be popular oversight of elected politicians. Wow. I'm not sure how that's going to work.
Okay, I'm going to make an editorial comment. That's the dumbest idea I've ever heard in my life. You're going to staff a watchdog group with people who aren't paid in Washington, D.C. What are you asking for? You that is essentially instant corruption. Just add water.
Well, and it gets even worse, too, because they can basically, you know, decide upon and establish goals that the people expect their managers to accomplish when they're given time frame, and they would get warned up to and including premature removal from office if they don't comply. and this public house would have the power to veto congressional legislation if it is deemed to unfairly favor a segment of the population or not be in the best interest of the American people. So in other words, it's a super chamber, Charles. It's the executive and the legislature all rolled into one. But I don't think it's going to actually. Right.
It just went from stupid to ultra stupid.
Exactly. All right. So next, moving on, is our next candidate is a whistleblower by trade.
A professional whistleblower.
Professional whistleblower, yes. Jeff Boss. So basically, he believes that the NSA is bugging his phone. And
he's probably right, yeah.
And trying to poison him in an effort to cover up the truth about 9/11.
Okay.
So Jeff Boss, we don't know when he was born, but he lives in Richfield Park, New Jersey. And he believes that, you know, the NSA is doing all these things, and that the NSA orchestrated the terrorist attacks of September 11th. So he takes every available opportunity to denounce the NSA and inform the public that he has evidence proving their involvement in the September 11th attacks, including DVD recordings and affidavits from over 500 people in the know, admitting that the NSA paid them $20,000 for their silence. Okay, that's only $10 million. That's pocket change to the NSA, Chuck.
Barry, I'm just telling you, he had me with the NSA is bugging his phone. Well, gosh, everybody knows that. The poisoning thing, okay, whatever, dude. They're going to poison you because you paid $20,000 to somebody for their silence, over 500 people.
Okay. He also part of his platform, Chuck, is he supports a $15 minimum wage, free or higher education, up to and including doctorates, for all who desire it, and a $400 flat rate for automobile insurance guaranteed by the state. he wants legalized marijuana, equal rights for everyone, but he doesn't want any federal taxation of federal workers or state taxation of city and state workers. So in other words, don't tax the government employees, and supports gun rights. Now, I'll agree with him on that very last
The marijuana explains a lot in this case. The marijuana legalization.
It does explain a lot.
Yeah.
But the other point is, you know what? He actually may have backed into a really good point here. What is the use of taxing federal and state and local employees because they're paid for by tax dollars? So in other words, what we're saying is, we're going to give you our tax money, but we're going to take a little bit of it back so that you feel like you've paid taxes too.
Yeah.
Now, you know, Chuck, you and I had that experience one time in a class with a debate with someone who couldn't quite understand the fact that as a government worker, they weren't actually creating wealth. They were taking money from the taxpayers.
Yeah. And we had to explain to him, we don't operate on tax money, his particular department. We don't operate on taxes. We operate on fees.
Mm-hmm.
a fee required of a government agency is a tax, and he would not concede to that.
No, absolutely not.
So, yeah, it's unbearably silly. Yeah.
Okay, well, moving on, our next declared candidate is the executive director of Bon Passe Exoneration Services, Morrison Bon Passe. A trained legal expert with deep concerns about the American prison system, he runs a nonprofit to exonerate the wrongfully convicted. He's probably got quite a bit of work, Chuck. I'll have to say that because our justice system, it has some flaws in it. It's not the best thing. Now, he has a great background academically. Phillips Academy, Andover, Yale University, Boston University Law School. He lives in Maine. And this is his heart is for the wrongly convicted. And so, and he's also a published author on the subject. He's very concerned about what he calls unsustainable population growth, and we need to lower the worldwide birth rate to match the rate of death, resulting in zero net growth. Now, it's interesting, Chuck, because if your birth rate doesn't outpass your mortality rate, your culture will die.
Well, and here's the problem. How do you get there? The only way to get there is through draconian government action. Basically drugging people with birth control drugs against their will and without their knowledge. It's the only mm-hmm. way to do it.
That's right. Well, and proof positive that a string of academic degrees doesn't make you wise. Bonpas, other than this net zero net growth, believes we should have a single global currency. That he supports abortion, is in favor of the Affordable Care Act, believes that gender identity and sexual orientation should be added to the list of protection classes, wants to abolish capital punishment, and supports the legalization of recreational drug use. So what it gets down to is he is a classic liberal without the money.
Yeah. Yeah. So, he's a weird mix of totalitarianism and libertarianism.
Exactly. Okay. Our next candidate is the Chicago businessman, philanthropist, and recording artist Willie Wilson. Willie Wilson from Louisiana, who is a declared self-made man because he has come up through deep poverty, quit school in the eighth grade, lived in work camps in Florida, basically was working as a janitor in a McDonald's in the 1970s, and he was asked to temporarily manage the store when most of his coworkers walked off the job. He accepted, and his performance was so exemplary, says his bio, that he was invited to keep his new role. But basically, he met with Ray Kroc, the founder of McDonald's, and he actually opened his own McDonald's franchise. Now he's owned several McDonald's and expands into other industries. So just to show you, Chuck, that your background, your environment doesn't necessarily destine you to be poor and destitute all of your life. Here's a man who took extreme hardship, extreme deprivations, and turned them into success because of an entrepreneurial spirit. He now has basically a Doctor of Divinity from Mount Carmel Theological Seminary, a Doctorate of Humane Letters from Chicago Baptist Institute, and a Doctorate in Humanitarianism from the Denver Institute of Urban Studies. He's also been awarded an honorary doctorate in humanitarianism from Swishel Bible College. He has run for the mayor of Chicago, Chuck, which basically, and he won 11% of the vote and finished third place. So now he's going to take that experience to run for president. Now, you know, he's very liberal on most of his social ideas, but otherwise he is showing that it isn't the whole old meme of poverty will keep people down. You have to overcome your circumstances is Willie Wilson's message.
Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with that. It's sort of there is a disconnect between the idea that you have to create and maintain a welfare state and you have to have an entrepreneurial spirit. Sorry, but the welfare state kills the entrepreneurial spirit.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, Mr. Wilson has not put those two things together. He doesn't realize that he pulled himself up by his bootstraps. He didn't use the government to give him things. Although I'm sure he partook of the safety net when it was available, the so-called safety net.
Okay. And just to prove that the Democratic Party is not necessarily a monolith, as I think our listeners may be understanding by now with these various candidates, we have the next candidate, Lloyd Kelso, who is an attorney. Is 65 years old. He was born in North Carolina, has received his degree from the South Carolina School of Law, and also has a degree from Gordon-Conwell Theological Seminary. And so basically, he wants to empower the middle class. And he's running as a Democrat, and he's on fiscal issues. He's pretty much a liberal. No taxes on any income taxes on people earning less than $10,000 a year, and a flat tax graduating up to 15% for the rich. Now, how does a flat tax graduate, Chuck? I thought the flat tax was it was a single rate for everybody.
The only thing I can think of is that it's a stair step tax.
Okay, then that's what I would think too. I think calling it a flat tax is probably a misnomer.
Yeah, it's not flat at all. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And he does support a balanced budget amendment to the Constitution, so obviously he's not very constitutional. And he supports gun rights. He wants to secure the border with Mexico, declare English a national language, repeal Obamacare. We need to have robust military spending, he says. But he still wants to legalize medicinal marijuana and wants to have rehabilitation rather than punishment of the incarcerated. So he is kind of a mixed bag, but overall, I think Attorney Lloyd Kelso probably would be considered more of a moderate in his Democratic Party.
I would say so, yeah. And he's almost there on the incarceration thing. I mean, the biblical thing is restitution, not rehabilitation.
Exactly.
It's restitution, and habitual criminals basically don't fare well.
Exactly.
In that system, eventually it becomes a death penalty thing because they, you know, they become more and more violent. So that's the bottom line there.
Okay. Well, here is a candidate, Chuck, next that you and I might really want to pay a little bit more attention to and you know, maybe talk with. Declared Democratic presidential candidate Harry Braun. He's a senior scientist. And he's all about accountability because he doesn't see any of it in American government, which I understand. And says, in fact, he believes it never has really existed, and he likes to point out the little understood fact that the United States is not and has never been a, quote, democracy, unquote. Well, we would agree with him on that.
Yes, definitely.
The nation is a constitutional republic, ultimately bearing little resemblance in government structure to that found in ancient Athens. Braun argues that this has led to an oligarchic collectivist government in which a relative handful of wealthy lobbyists reliably get their own way at the expense of the majority who are supposed to be represented by those in power. I don't see any argument with that either.
I know where he's going with it. With the end point is the problem, not the path.
And here's the coup de grace. Finding the arrangement intolerable, Braun advocates for the passing of a democracy amendment to the Constitution, specifically giving the American people absolute veto power over any legislation passed by Congress, executive orders issued by the president, and judicial decisions made by the courts, so long as they, quote, impact the majority of citizens, unquote. So basically, he calls for an Article 5 Constitutional Convention to enter the amendment. And Chuck, this is a great microcosm of the reason why we oppose any call for an Article 5 convention, because it isn't about a balanced budget. It's about all of these things, the Democracy Amendment, the People's House Amendment. I mean, we can go down this list, and everybody will say, well, these people are crazy. Well, no, these people are only crazy until they're given the access to the levers to get the job done.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's interesting that his so-called amendment would only involve decisions and laws as long as they impact the majority of citizens. Well, what does that do? That basically is the tyranny of the majority against the minority. Basically, if the minority does something the majority doesn't like, then the majority just sits on them. This is exactly why the Constitution was written as a constitutional republic, because it's a rule of law rather than a rule of man. And that's why democracy, we aren't a democracy, and that's why democracy doesn't work.
Okay. Well, here is, we're coming into the home stretch. I think we only have two more to talk about. And this candidate is a CIA and U.S. envoy with G4 classification, Doug Schreffler. And he graduated from Wentworth Military Academy and college with honors. He turned down a commission in the Army to go into the CIA. And so he's had a lot of background in foreign affairs. I wonder why.
Yeah.
And although a registered Democrat, he stated, quote, my allegiance rests in the American people and not any political party or ideal. Well, actually, the idea of the American people is an ideal. So actually, it does rest in that. But, you know, that's quibbling. So basically, here we have a former CIA operative who wants to become president of the United States, as opposed to other CIA operatives who become president of the United States. And we've seen how that works.
Yeah, that hasn't worked out.
That hasn't worked out quite so well. I don't believe Doug Schreffler is going to get much traction. But another man who probably will get traction, as a matter of fact, whose name is now starting to appear in some of the polling that's taking place among Democrats because of the withdrawal of two of the major figures, Chafee and Webb, is 2016 Democratic presidential candidate Larry Lessig, Lawrence Lessig. That name ought to be familiar to many of our listeners, Chuck, if they were paying attention about 5 or 6 years ago, when Lawrence Lessig, who was, I believe, the president of Harvard University, was blasted for his sexist attitudes and comments, and was summarily drummed out of Harvard for some comment he made against feminism. We can pull that up and talk about it in more depth, but I think that we can just kind of talk about the fact that he is now in the race for president for the United States under the Democratic Party. And Larry Lessig, born in South Dakota, grew up in Williamsport, Pennsylvania, has his degrees from the University of Pennsylvania, and has got an MA in philosophy from Cambridge. Has a Juris Doctor from Yale Law School, and was a clerk for Justice Antonin Scalia at the Supreme Court. Now, he's still a law professor, and his idea, he has one issue, and one issue alone, Chuck, and I think this is interesting. It's called legislation he calls the Citizen Equality Act. And basically, it has three reforms relating to voting, congressional representation, and campaign funding. And he wants automatic voter registration and election day as a national holiday, the abolition of gerrymandering districting process to be replaced by districts mandated to contain equal proportions of partisan voters. That'll be interesting to see.
Oh, yeah.
And the overturning of the Citizens United Supreme Court decision that removed limits on campaign spending. and so he's upset that the Constitution doesn't allow for a federal referendum to pass law. And he would run to become a referendum president, and he basically wants to pass that piece of legislation. Now, he says he has no interest in the Oval Office beyond that one act. And so, therefore, he says if he wins that passage of the Citizens Equality Act, he will step down from the presidency and his vice president can run the country.
Okay. Boy, talk about a one-note Johnny.
A one-note Johnny, and you have to think about this, Chuck. He is one of the people who are teaching our future attorneys and judges as a law professor in some of our most prestigious law schools.
Okay. And the guy clerked for
Lessig is now picking up support because of the dropping out of other candidates in this race, including Joe Biden, Jim Webb, and Lincoln Chafee.
Wow. And he clerked for Antonin Scalia.
And clerked for Antonin Scalia at one time, coming up through his experience in the courts and in the law. So those are your now 16 declared candidates for the Democratic nomination. So, Chuck, I guess if things do completely go south in the Republican Party, there might be a very small handful, mind you, of candidates whom Christian constitutionalists and conservatives might be attracted to vote for in the Democratic nomination.
I guess if that's your flavor. Yeah, you'd have to hold your nose on a lot of the things that they want. Larry Lessig is a major mixed bag, and a lot of these guys are a major mixed bag. It's sort of like, well, you can see the good things in there, but they've mixed it in with so much poison. It's the old saying about how do you get somebody to eat poison? You mix it with candy.
Exactly. Now, for our listeners, we will keep everybody informed as new candidates appear and as candidates drop out, and we'll do those as updates during other programs. And, of course, people will be paying attention to that, too, because most of the time when candidates drop out of the races, it receives some major media, such as when Rick Perry and Scott Walker dropped out in the Republican primary. And from when Joe Biden took a pass and decided not to run, and Chafee and Webb both withdrew. So we'll keep folks informed as the field is winnowed down as we move into the 2016 primary and caucus season, which, Chuck, is very close. We're typing this at the end of October.
Yep.
We are looking at just a little over 2 months before the first actual counted elections of the 2016 presidential season take place. So there's not a lot of time, but there's an awful lot of people in the field.
Boy, isn't that the case? And unfortunately, they're all hovering around 2 or 3, 5% support, if they have that much.
Well, you know, and sometimes that gets people frustrated, and they do crazy things. Just take last night's Republican debate, for example. Our own John Kasich of Ohio actually really kind of hurt his own brand, I think, by his absolutely...
Well, Barry, I have to... If you look at the description, we have an article here that we're both looking at. He was referred to as Shouty McScreamy Pants.
Shouty McScreamy Pants, that's right. Folks, I'm sorry, but that's not the gravitas you need for being the leader of the free world. John Kasich walked into that debate after a rally in Westerville on Tuesday where he said, you know, what's with these people? And he was going to go in there and show them who was boss and tell them what conservatism means because, as we know, Chuck, as he said before, he has the right to define conservatism for the Republic.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he gets to decide.
However, he got marginalized. People ignored him, and the one time that he did try to basically throw a haymaker at one Donald Trump responded by basically knocking his mouthpiece so far out of his mouth they had to climb three rows to find it.
And if you don't get that reference, it's a boxing reference.
It is a boxing reference. Because basically, even though Ted Cruz said that it wasn't a cage match, last night was a cage match.
Well, and it was a cage match for all participants because apparently the audience turned on the moderators when the moderators decided to gang up on Ben Carson for one. They attempted to gang up on several of the participants, and basically the audience booed the moderators. So the day that the journalists can basically run roughshod over presidential candidates, over people who are being interviewed and that kind of thing, it's over, Barry. And it's over because it's interesting to note that Mitt Romney has been making noises about how he misses the good old days when journalists could basically run roughshod. They can't do it because of alternative media, things like podcasts and radio broadcasts like you and I do.
Absolutely.
When we do analysis of situations and when we look at journalists and the questions that they're asking and the bias that they're obviously demonstrating, they're not getting away with it these days. And this actually showed exactly that. So it was a cage match for everybody involved.
Well, and I think that really just shows, Chuck, that the worm is turning, that the people are not just going to be fed what the politicians and the media want them to hear, but they're going to be responding. And I believe that, you know, some of our Democratic candidates who want the more control by the American people are starting to see it happen without having to have a constitutional convention, without having to have all of the legislative hijinks that we've had in the past. I think the people are finally getting somewhat fed up of being spoon-fed what they're supposed to believe, and they're starting to think for themselves. And I think we can thank the rise of social media and the rise and the application of the internet to the vast majority of people's lives to be able to go out and find the information that you really need in order to, number one, make an informed decision when you vote, but also, number two, to understand how things are being spun and how you should look at it from a biblical viewpoint.
Exactly, and there are plenty of places you can go out and find that out, and one of those places is where? www.principledpolicy.com. That's www.principledpolicy.com, and we have some lots of archived podcasts. We have the first part of this particular broadcast. It's called How Many Democratic Presidential Candidates Did You Say There Were? And what was the total count there that we came up with? Was it 19?
Yeah, there were 19 before the dropouts of Webb, Chafee, and Joe Biden's non-appearance.
Yeah, so
16 candidates.
Yeah, we're down to 16 on the Democratic side, and we're down to about 31.
32, I think.
32
on the... We had one join and then two drop, so...
Yeah. And one of the joins is not going to be in very long. There's just no way around it. And I think after this debate, you are going to see a number of dropouts. There are people who are just basically those who are not in it just to sell books, like Mike Huckabee and Rick Santorum, who were serious about a run but aren't going to go anyplace. That's Rand Paul is one of them. They're going to be dropping out sooner than later. They might try to hold out through New Hampshire, but honestly, conservative candidates don't do well in New Hampshire, so they're not going to be able to hold out. Okay, we're out of time for this week, and we want to know what you think. So again, principledpolicy.com. We also would ask you to join us again next week for another Principles and Policies.